Welcome everybody to the welcome everybody to the next episode of
hey Scott, what are you doing over there?
That's not me.
Your mouth was moving.
I was trying to talk.
It wasn't the talking, it was the screeching monkey noises I was actually inquiring about.
Ryan, that was the solar flares. They're interfering with all the technology right now.
No, I'm pretty sure that was your face. I'm sure it's just your face was moving and the sound was coming out.
I'm affected by the solar flares just like electronics. They affect everything.
Yeah, that's not reaching at all. anyway, everybody, welcome to episode 16 of Tech Bacon.
Welcome.
It is June 11th, 2011. What's the deal with the solar flares? I haven't actually paid attention.
I don't know. Scientists saw a solar flare that was like half the size of the sun the other day and said that it would just be really interfering with the magnetic field of the Earth. For real.
Well, the sun is big, so half the sun would also be big. That's probably problematic.
And I mean, I don't know if anybody else had been having a crazy week, but my week has been insane.
This week has been terrible from top to bottom. Not terrible, just like out of control.
Out of control. Everything. Yeah. And I mean, like, obviously, I work on computers. Things have been just crazy busy. Things breaking.
Right. Was lightning striking things and giving them artificial intelligence and calling themselves like Johnny Five and whatnot?
Not that I know of.
Because that would be cool.
That would be fun.
You know? Or it could be like Superman 3 when, you know, they basically go and like the computer becomes self-aware.
And then turns that woman into a computer.
A big robot.
Remember?
Yeah.
Like her face gets...
Exactly. They all the wires wrap around her, which is very, very scary. And then they have like the green... They have like the
Have you watched that
stuff.
Recently, by the way?
I haven't because my memories of it are fond and I don't want to ruin Christmas by watching it.
No, like for some reason when that woman gets turned into a robot is one of my favorite movie moments of a kid. And I know it's got to be horrible.
I love that movie so much. First of all, Robert Vaughn's in it, so you know it's going to be god-awful. But even the stuff where it's like, oh, they're skiing on a rooftop and, you know, in Manhattan or whatever, like a metropolis. I'm that's cool. What's wrong with
so
that?
Cool.
And Richard Pryor is hilarious.
Of course, he was stealing like, what was it, one quarter of every penny from the bank, like through a computer. It's actually pretty forward thinking with the computers and stuff like that. This was in the 80s.
Yeah. What was also funny, too, is I thought I was like really cool for liking Richard Pryor, even as a little kid, not knowing that that was not really Richard Pryor, like how he really was.
Right.
But
right.
I'm like, no, I like him. He's awesome.
Yeah. I know his comedy.
Yeah. Like that and the toy, I was golden.
Yeah, that's the only thing. At that point, that's the only thing I knew of Richard Pryor.
Right. I'm like, what do you mean he uses bad words? I don't understand what you're talking about.
Ah, the good old days. When we were so naive that we thought Richard Pryor was a family comedian.
He is. JoJo Dancer. Your life is
Your
calling.
Life is calling. You beat me to the punch.
Anyway, it's obviously we had to have that episode on Monday night with the WWDC stuff, and the week still ended up being crazy outside of solar flares and Superman 3 and Richard Pryor.
Yes.
But I guess quick follow-up, we can't obviously talk about using iOS 5 because there is an NDA in place, even though there's been lots of talk in the Apple community about how everybody's just kind of not paying attention to that anymore.
Well, I know some people who have
strived,
used them.
We here strive to a higher standard, so we will only talk about people we've talked to that have used it.
Right.
We have not used
it.
But people we know have used it, and we're going to relay what they say.
So Brian's going to talk about what one person he knows.
My friend Ryan.
And I'm going to talk about...
And Scott has lost it. Solar flares.
And I'm going to... Man. Really?
What?
So you're going to talk about Ryan, and I'm going to talk about...
You never rhymed your
Todd.
Own name? Really?
Todd. Really?
No, Scott. Think. Scott.
Exactly.
Brock.
Brock? Okay, Brock. Brock's a good dude, man. I've known Brock since college.
You've known Brock since you were born, really.
Yeah, like we
you guys have been
we're like twins.
Yeah, really. You guys are super, super close. Anyway, and I'm just gonna and from what Ryan has told me, it's been very, very cool. He's put it on an iPad and an iPhone as well, which iPhone may have been a poor decision, like, you know, but it's actually been it's actually been very, very stable.
And Brock put it on his iPod third gen iPod Touch. iPod Touch.
Cool.
Yes. So, thoughts from your side?
Overall, it's really, really amazing. I don't know if I would call it necessarily revolutionary. Is there a lot of features that we were kind of waiting for, and now those, you know, holes have filled in, as we kind of talked about on Monday? The implementation of those features, though, is excellent. Everything you would expect. I mean, it's, you know, and certain things I was really, really, or certain things, Ryan, you know, I was really excited to hear about from Ryan.
And what were the top features that Ryan thinks they just like hit out of the park?
I think the implementation of notifications, and not just the fact that it's there, the way they've made it really, really granular in terms of how you can go and, you know, drill down and say what you want certain things to do. You can basically make it if you want it to be in the drawer, not be in the drawer, how many items in the drawer. You know, if you want it to be like like a little banner alert at the top, if you want it to be like with a big, you know, old school style, you know, blue bars, because certain things you basically want to have to dismiss it to know it's happened. Mm-hmm. Things like that. They think they really, really did it well. It looks beautiful. It's unobtrusive. All those things you want it to be.
Right.
And the utility of it is fantastic, obviously.
Brock was telling me that he really liked the lock screen notifications.
Absolutely.
That they showed up
down
there.
And you can slide left to right to open that stuff.
Which was very cool. Now, one of the things that Brock had noticed was when you dismiss a notification, it's a couple of clicks, which I thought was kind of interesting. I'm not sure exactly how you solve it, but I mean, just being able to click it away as opposed to click and then clear.
Are you talking about in the drawer, the notification center?
In the drawer itself.
Right, right.
Yeah. Did you see that?
I did. Well, and so there's no way to go and get individual ones out. It's basically all groups from that app,
they're probably going to tweak these things.
Yeah.
You know, like this is
I was a little bit surprised at that as well, because sometimes you want to go and keep like one call up there as a reminder without, you know, all the other calls you've missed or something like that.
Right. And I was sitting with Brock and he sent iMessage test to Ryan.
Such a liar. You weren't sitting with Brock.
I was, man. We hang out every day. Every day he gets a little annoying.
I can vouch for that.
I'm sure you feel that way about Ryan at times.
I think both Ryan and Brock probably get on each other's nerves too. Especially they have a show as well. They do, but we're not talking about that now.
But we can't discuss it.
Yeah, secret show.
Yeah, but the iMessage system is very cool. Being able to send from a iPod device Wi-Fi that has no phone,
or an iPad,
or an iPad to any other iOS device is kind of awesome.
It's fantastic. One thing that bums me out thus far, at least, is that the way that triggers is – and they show this in the keynote. You can trigger basically off a phone number or off of an email address. And so what the bummer –
seems a little confusing.
Well, it is, because they need some place to reference it. And like what's great about it, I think, for the phones will be that you'll just, you know, use that to queue off of the phone number. So that's what makes it transparent if you have two phones.
Correct.
You basically will just – it'll check the phone number. And then it says, okay, yeah, you have a device and that's fine. It doesn't look like it goes – I think it basically checks your contacts for both, I think, if you're on a phone. But if you are on – if you were using a non-phone device, that's basically – it has to queue off of email only. And there doesn't seem to be a way to go, from what I've heard.
Right. I'm surprised they don't use the phone number. Apple user ID.
Well, you can.
No, no. I mean
– as an absolute, you mean?
No, no. The user ID for the device. Each device has a UID built in to like – that you don't ever really see. If you go to about, you can see it.
Sure.
But like, why not use that? Yeah. That would make sense.
I don't know, maybe because the one thing you can do is you can customize it in terms of like what email address you want to go and have a certain device respond to, and also what you want your callback number to look
now,
for.
Now, also, prior to this system, you could go to Messages and just send emails to people, I believe.
You could.
One of my coworkers was telling me that's how she sends emails from her phone. She would just go into the messaging app, and then it would
– Oh, yeah. If you put an email in there, you can do that. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But I think that's – I think that's an SMS thing though.
No, no. It would send – just it would go through the regular mail app.
But no, I'm saying I think that was a function of SMS, because I've had family members that didn't have an iPhone or anything. If you would go and send – if you accidentally send a text to their – like it shows up as an AT&T number. I think it's an AT&T network side thing.
No, I saw that, but she was telling me that like normally when she just sends regular email, she would pull it up in the messaging app to send to a friend, and it would send to their email address from her email address. Not as a text.
I think it actually goes as a text, as I've done this before. I mean, I've had that kind of thing where people send the wrong thing to the wrong number or whatever, and basically would show up on AT&T, would show up as an mms.att.net, something like that.
Right.
I think that's a network side thing that AT&T does, not necessarily a function of the devices. But you're right. It's in that sense.
It makes it a little different.
It's different. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, but I guess you can always just turn off. You can turn off iMessaging, and then it has the same functionality,
right?
Because you can turn off iMessaging within the message application.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. That makes sense.
Yeah, and also did some. There's supposedly the rudimentary. There's some rudimentary like preliminary, you know, iCloud implementation right now that doesn't. A backing up seems to work. Restoring does not. From what I was trying, or Ryan, I've heard. You know, whatever.
you guys get the point.
Yeah.
When Brian refers to himself, just to think he's referring as Brian and as Ryan. Brian, who am I talking to? Where am I?
Solar flares.
I don't understand what
solar flares. But anyway, it looks, you know, don't want to go into too much detail about anything, obviously, but it's like the base, the stuff that in terms of this is also that they talked about at the keynote.
Yeah.
And the implementation of it, basically, it looks really nice. I think the real, you know, the gusto of the whole thing is going to come when we do see the iCloud stuff. And I think the kind of hints we've seen in that, Photo Stream works exactly as advertised, surprisingly
and,
so.
And the and I don't, this isn't just an iOS 5 thing, but the just the buy and download anywhere, that's
iTunes
working
in the cloud and
fully now.
Yeah, right. And that's – I mean, I was at the at a restaurant last night and basically wanted to – you know, didn't have something there and just like download it. And it seemed to download really quickly, quicker than usual actually as well, which is odd.
They may have bumped some speeds or something.
But yeah, it all works as advertised. And while that's not a streaming solution in terms of like, you know, the, it's nice. A tremendously increased utility.
No, the download everywhere feature I think is great. While we're talking about music, I do have to say as the more I thought about their whole music announcement and all that stuff, I'm a little disappointed. And I mean, obviously I don't think we don't know exactly what it's going to fully be yet, but the download everywhere is great. It's a great implementation, but it's not a cloud-based music service. You know what I mean? Like you're not, it's just giving you access to the files to download to your devices everywhere.
Right. It's more of a locker in a literal definition.
But not even your own locker. It's licensed to a locker to the songs. Like you're not storing those in your locker. They're one file that Apple can push down to everyone's. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, unless it's the stuff that you've uploaded that you
which
uploaded
we don't know because
that
hasn't.
Match, but
we haven't. Nobody's been able to try that yet. But you know what I'm saying? It's. I don't know. The more I've thought about it, I still like what they're doing, but I really wanted to see an actual, you know, like cloud-based streaming service.
Well, streaming was the thing that everybody kind of expected to happen. It's interesting. Given storage limitations and that kind of stuff, you wonder what's going to be the best experience for this kind of stuff.
But if, you know, even if they have these licenses now, right, where you can download from their storage servers, right? So if you have the license to the file, you can download it. Why not do the same thing with streaming? You don't need more space. You need more bandwidth, but you don't need more space to store the files.
I think that's what you hit upon because I don't think it's a logistical storage thing on their end by any means. Obviously, they have 200 million users that they're going to be giving, you know, 5 gigabytes out of the gate for free.
Yeah.
And as an aside, it does look like there is going to be the ability to go and like, you know, buy additional storage and that kind of stuff, which would be expected.
Absolutely.
I think at first I thought it maybe was a licensing situation, and then I think it can't really be because there are, if you're paying the $25, you're kind of already, you know, doing
that. That's what I thought.
I think it's exactly what you said. I think it's bandwidth, and I would bet if I had to go and guess what it is, and there's nothing, I have no information about this.
Yeah.
It's just the one thing that, you know, Apple has always been very conservative with. It's not overburdening the carriers additionally with new features, i.e. FaceTime being Wi-Fi only for the moment, that kind of stuff. If anything, I would bet you money that they may not roll it out until there's a 4G iPhone, and then they'll have streaming. That'd be my only guess.
Maybe. I mean, yeah.
It doesn't seem like there should be. Maybe
no, I mean, and look at services like RDO and Rhapsody.
Right.
They have almost the identical catalogs available that Apple has, and they're streaming every one of those songs to every one of their users. So curious and a little upsetting.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Like I said, I really like the features that they have. Like that changes the experience a lot for all of us. I was hoping for the cloud-based solution to make me get rid of any other one I use.
Well, it's like we talked about the Holy Grail ultimately is that, you know, 3 or 4 prong thing we talked about, you know, with like the you know, download, you know, streaming and maybe a subscription to get access to anything and all those things we talked about a couple weeks ago. I agree. It's a specific usage model, you know, and it does seem like there that streaming component. You do want to go and have that just in case, just for on the fly, because you can download, you can stream particular songs,
like
but it's that one at a time thing you can do. If you're, you know, if you access the store now, you can listen to the previews. If you go to iTunes anywhere iTunes in the cloud.
Yeah. You can preview the songs.
You can listen to the whole song, I believe, but you can't. It's not the whole song.
Mm-mm.
You sure?
Yeah, I tried it.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. It's the previews just as it was before.
It
it's the same thing.
Got
it. You know, I see the implementation, though. Let's say you have the 16-gig iPad and you don't have that much of your music library on there.
Sure.
That would be a perfect implementation for the streaming.
I agree,
you know?
Yeah.
It would be, or even a phone. Like the phones, you're not holding. I have 40 gigs of music. If you have a 16-gig phone or even a 32-gig phone, it's still, you know, if you want to have any movies or any other media or apps or blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
that the streaming component is perfect for that.
Yeah.
It's perfect for that.
I wonder, and this is obviously, we're just speculating. They're putting such a focus on, here's one thing that's interesting. They never said the word sync. They never said the word streaming in the presentation.
They didn't. They specifically stayed away from that, it feels like.
Yeah, because I think they're trying to make it purely about how you experience stuff. You know what I mean? As a user.
They said play.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that what they,
exactly.
They kept using the word play.
And so one thing I wonder too, and what we're talking about, if you basically say, okay, you can stream it, but you can only stream it on these different parameters, that kind of thing, then suddenly that gets people starting to think about it as a technical thing,
mm-hmm.
getting away from what they're obviously going with, which is just like transparent access to data, blah, blah, blah.
Where as if they have it, you can play.
Yeah, everywhere. Where if they have it available on Wi-Fi and cellular networks, mm-hmm. then they can just say, and you just listen to it like this.
And you might be right. It might be a 4G launch.
Yeah. Because I wonder if having to go and parse out different types of functionality based on stuff is what they are kind of to stay away from. Because I agree with you. Ultimately, that's what everybody wants.
Yeah.
But I got to think because of that, there's got to be a specific reason why they're not doing it. It's not
totally.
Just like they're saying like, oh, people don't want that. Clearly people want it.
Clearly.
You know, and clearly they know that that's, you know, that's what they're working towards as an overall model.
Yeah. But I do have to say that the play everywhere and like I said, that, you know, this is the download everywhere. That's everyone can do it now. I always have my iTunes running at home.
Mm-hmm.
On my Mac Mini that just sits at home. So for my implementation, I have that running at home. I have the Google Cloud Sync also running on that same machine.
Right.
And they're just sitting there idle. But if I'm out and about or I'm on my computer and I download something on my laptop, first of all, I don't even have to get home. It shows up on my Android phone because it's been downloaded on my own iTunes. That's a pretty awesome feature.
The whole thing is so
set,
cool. I mean, it's like Google had shown.
And I don't have to do anything. Once it's set up, and this is using two different – this is Apple and Google at the same time, and I'm not doing anything. It's
great. That download anywhere thing is like – our automatic downloads thing is
very
so
nice.
Slick. I remember it was a year and a half ago, Google's I.O., they showed something where you could go and buy an app or buy music on the web version of their store, and it would download automatically to your device.
Yeah,
is that implemented yet?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. I use that all the time.
With music as well or –
Well, you can't buy
because
music.
There's no music store. Okay,
right.
Got it.
But yeah, the app store on the web, it's great.
Cool. And it was Sony because I was at work and I wanted to go and download something. And I wanted to go whatever reason. Basically, I didn't have my phone with me. There's some I forget what the exact situation was, but basically, I just bought it on my computer there.
Right.
And had it, and then basically, I turned around and it was just downloading to my phone. It's one of these things where it's obvious functionality, but it hasn't existed really in a lot of ways. And so when you kind of get it, it's like, oh my gosh, this seems like such a revelation, and
totally.
It seems so obvious once it's there.
Yeah, definitely.
So
interesting. Any other on the iPod Touch, little buggy.
Definitely.
I have a lot of music on there. It's crashed on me several times.
Music,
especially more. You know, I've noticed the crashing has been music player related.
Oh, really? I've had no music problems. I've had settings issues.
But,
I've had iCloud settings stuff.
Interesting.
But no music problems.
Yeah,
and there's
crashing a lot on me, but. That's to be expected.
Oh, yeah. It's like beta 1, totally.
It makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's some other stuff. We don't want to go into too much detail about other stuff that hasn't been covered elsewhere. But,
no, but.
But overall, very impressed. Very,
yes.
Very speedy. Battery life hasn't taken a hit, even with a lot of this background stuff going on.
You know, mine actually on the touch has taken a hit in battery, which is the first I've ever noticed.
The first day I did, but I haven't since then. I don't know what changed.
Oh, weird.
But the first day, it was like maybe like literally it dropped. I almost ran up at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's kind of – maybe there's some update going on or something.
Or maybe just – I don't know what it was, but it was like the first day was really bad, and since then it's actually been close to normal. So
yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Good.
But and first impressions very favorable from Miss Annalise or from Ryan
in general. And, and tell Ryan thank you very much for helping us out.
Absolutely,
with this.
And same with Brock.
I will. I'll let him know right away.
Brock is a good guy. We should go out and go to movies or have drinks with those guys sometime.
Yeah, the four of us definitely.
Yeah,
we can hang out, geek out,
or watch Fight Club.
Nice. And on that note, we move on.
Anyway, the other news, yes, there was other tech news this week. There was
actually a
huge, fantastic, phenomenal, large, here in Los Angeles, gamer conference, basically, E3.
Yeah, the E3 convention was going on in downtown Los Angeles. The city was abuzz. There was a lot. I actually was downtown the other night. There was tons of people.
Have you been before?
No, I haven't been.
It's fun.
Have you gone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like some years ago, it's really fun.
It was funny though. I was downtown, on Wednesday night in the middle of the conference, and there was just the gaming crowd everywhere. And this is very stereotypical, but like one of the bars was closed down for a private party and there was a line outside. It hadn't opened yet. And there were no women. at all. It was just all guys.
What are you trying to say?
With badges and iPhones and iPads standing waiting in line to get into a bar. It was really weird.
So there were a lot of awesome dudes trying to get into a bar.
And no girls to be found. I'm just saying there were no women.
I think you're
I think there are women that think you're kind of are gamers, but I'm just saying I didn't see them.
I think you're kind of a hater.
So biggest thing.
Way to offend the audience once again, Scott.
Great. Biggest news.
Yes.
Out of E3.
I guess we could say like this one was the biggest. Yeah.
I mean, I would say it was the biggest news.
Yeah.
The Nintendo Wii U.
Not we me. Not we they. Not we us. Wii U.
Ba-dum-bum. So the Wii U, they're going hardcore after the hardcore gaming consoles this time. They're kind of taking everything they've done with the Wii and putting in a major processor, you know, major graphics processor to compete with the Xbox and mm-hmm. PlayStation this time, which they hadn't done.
Right. Well, they kind of like banked on the differentiation of not being the graphics intensive console.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that they said that the processor that's processing this is the same one that powers the Watson computer. Yeah, that's what they said.
Basically, and the Wii U is essentially an HD version of the Wii itself. The case has been redesigned a little bit,
yeah.
But the controller is one of the big changes. They basically have put for lack of a better term,
a
smaller iPad with like Wii controllers on either side in your hand, and that's the way you do it, which at first blush always makes me think of that terrible Sega Genesis, you know, thing where you had a little tiny
screen,
which I thought was going to be so great, especially for football games.
It was
games,
like a little pop-up screen, like LCD screen.
It was terrible. It was useless.
I totally forgot about that.
But that's so funny. That's the first thing I think about. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a dumb idea that didn't work before, but this is actually a really, really nice screen.
Very high quality screen.
Interesting idea. Like
yeah.
it's weird though, because I think hardcore gamers and I think of certain ways you interact with it, and then I see this, they seem to be
I think
controllers, as we've seen, have not changed for like, you know, 15 years,
but
because they work for that, you know, way of interacting with games really, really well.
Right. Well, and I, from some of the demos I saw, it looks like the tablet
mm-hmm.
gets recognized like the Wii remotes with the IR sensor also.
Oh, so you can move
yeah,
it around and
it's actually movement based. So, and I think it's probably even more precise because of the size of this device. I'm curious to see the implementation. I really don't know. Also, there was kind of a list of things about it that were interesting. One of them was you can only use one at a time.
One controller?
Yeah. One of the new controllers at a time.
That is
strange, right?
And I guess that they're aiming more towards, you know, single person games, and you're basically collaborating online.
Right.
Then I guess that makes sense. But that seems to be striking against one of the things that has made the Wii interesting
yeah.
to itself.
Now, the other thing is all the other Wii peripherals are usable on this
gaming
system.
Yeah.
So that's a huge plus for them, because even if you get it and, you know, you have the one tablet, let's say that tablet thing doesn't take off.
Right.
Who cares? You still have all your Wii games that you can play with this. People are going to have their legacy stuff. They're hedging their bet. It's a gamble, but it's a calculated risk.
Well, it's very smart, because they don't want to go and alienate the people that already have that stuff. They don't want to basically, you know, you don't want to upgrade and then not be able to run your old games. I mean, at this point.
And you're just going
to
have a better version.
And
know?
Plus, Nintendo's been one of the only, you know, console makers that has been able to go and break from and say, we're not going to support previous games. We're going to go from the 64 to like,
right.
you know, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oftentimes, the form factor of the game itself would be changing. Like, instead of a cartridge, it'd be a disc or something else.
Exactly.
Sony and Microsoft have always been really concerned with backwards compatibility. It's kind of good to see them worry about that a little bit.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the first time.
Moving to discs, they can afford to do that, I guess, instead
exactly.
of investing in some proprietary
and soon
format.
It's not going to be discs anymore. It's just going to be downloads, you know.
One thing I thought was really, really ridiculous, and I don't know if it got too much buzz, is they showed off some great-looking demos of various games.
That was funny.
And it's like, wow, that's really neat. This thing can do all this stuff. The problem is the demos were actually cut footage from Xbox 360 and PS3 versions of the games.
Right.
So they were selling their console on how good other platforms are.
Yeah. It was just a little
ridiculous.
Faux pas.
That's not a faux pas. That's
no, I mean, but like they shouldn't have done that at all.
That to me is like kind of hardcore misrepresentation.
But like I was, you know, like. All the nobody in the press seemed to be that pissed. It was just kind of like, you just should have said so in the beginning and nobody would have cared. And yeah. It wouldn't have been a story.
Well, I think, you know, how far away are they really with this stuff?
Well,
it's not going to ship to the end of next year.
Right. I think they're pretty far off.
You know, and that's a long ways away.
I agree.
And once again, so many companies do this now, it seems. I do not understand why you pre-announce a product, let people get to see what you're doing over a year away.
I wonder if this was somewhat prompted by the leaks that happened in the past couple months.
Possibly, I guess.
You know, because it was kind of, imagine if they didn't. I could see their stock price taking a dive. Oh, they don't have anything coming up. They're stuck in the old, Xbox is announcing new stuff. PlayStation is announcing new stuff. And the Wii is just the same old.
But here's also what's weird to me.
You know, it's like,
how are they this far? I mean, this new thing could be fantastic. I mean, not Wii 2, Wii U. It could be wonderful. But why are they this late in getting it around? Like, it's not young necessarily. It's been around for a while.
I mean, it's just still a constant solid performer. I think that's why. Like, they haven't had the need until probably now.
But I think that's,
to start going forward.
But I don't necessarily buy that. Like, they've had to go and they finished the Wii and I'm sure they started developing the next gen console like that the day that thing shipped, if not before. You know what I mean? You just have to.
Well, maybe the console, but maybe not the whole tablet thing and the.
Well, that's what I think ultimately is. I think this whole tablet thing is like, and let's face it, they've done a lot of smack talking about iOS devices, right? It's like, oh no, people do like touchscreen stuff. Quick, we have to come up with this. I think this is them deciding to change course,
maybe,
because they're freaked out.
Maybe it could. And oh, by the way, it's not multi-touch touchscreen. It's just touchscreen. You can just touch points on the screen
because they have to make a certain price point. I'm sure.
Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting is one word. Lame is another.
Yeah. I guess it depends how you use it with the game.
But here's what's interesting too.
How are you going to use it with the game? That's the question.
Why would you go and limit that? Because all you do that is basically at that point, you're basically limiting what developers can do to make great games for you. That is weird to me.
It just, like I said, it depends on how you plan. Like, is it, if it was multi-touch,
right,
and you were doing so much on that screen, why would you look up?
Why would just think use
if
it
if it's
like,
only just tapping and switch my gun or
pinch,
you know, look
pinch
at my
to zoom with your thumbs. Number one, you basically want to, you have some sort of.
Yeah, but you would, I mean, you would have to really. You would
but no, if it's like, you could basically, if you're holding it like,
you know, like this.
Yeah, but you can, like, let's say you hold an iPad and you basically put your thumbs together. So, like, maybe, you know, do this or to, like, expand something or.
Maybe.
That to me seems like a no-brainer for interaction.
Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I agree. You wouldn't want to have, like, your whole hand beating, like, it's some
yeah,
sort
it's
of,
like,
you know, that thing, but.
It's hard to tell without.
And maybe that would
trying
change.
I'm sure it doesn't really excite me. It confuses me more.
Yeah, and it definitely, I think it does. I mean, I hadn't thought about this beforehand, but it does seem like it's a, oh no, we have to go and do something with the touchscreens that the kids like.
Could very well
kind
be.
Kind of thing.
Could very well be.
And it is funny, I got to say, they were such an innovator in terms of, like, you know, motion and direct interaction like that. And to be honest, Kinect and even Move to a degree are kind of like leaving them in the dust
Kinect's
behind.
Just leaving them in the dust.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, how do you, why would you try something other than a Kinect type thing?
I mean, it's
because that's the future.
It's got better. I mean, you could, depending on the games, you could say basically it has better developers. It has different developers. But in terms of, they're going after the hard game market, hardcore gamer, Microsoft's got the developers. They've got the processor power. You know, they've got the install base. You know, they've got Halo 4 that, you know, Microsoft talked about Halo 4 coming.
Yeah.
And they've got Kinect, which is a whole new paradigm. And frankly, if I can go and interact directly with my body versus
like a controller
not a controller I'm okay with, but a controller that I have to have like a screen with, and that just seems to become very complicated.
It does. It seems very complicated.
You know,
exactly.
What was neat about the Wii is that it was so simple.
Simple.
You just wanted to play tennis, you just swung your arm. You wanted to bowl, you just like you acted like you were bowling.
Right. Now, yeah. I think they made such a huge deal about this device, but that's,
you're loving that pop filter today.
It's almost like they should have done two announcements: Wii U, better graphics, better processor, newer, blah 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 blah, and then a new peripheral.
Right,
because it's not really, you don't need it to use the Wii U.
That's very true. Good point.
So it's like, it's really not the main player. It's the thing that makes headlines, but it's not the main player in the new device.
Well, the problem is, too, if they said, okay, here's the Wii U. It looks just like the Wii, but the graphics are nicer. Graphics HD.
That's what I mean.
Then everybody goes, you guys are dead. You guys are dead.
Yeah.
Game over.
Right.
It's interesting. Who knows? I mean, it's there's definitely.
And is it going to come with it? Are you going to have to buy it separately? Is it going to be just an add-on? Who knows? Like, I feel like you're going to buy the system without that. I think it's going to be a separate purchase.
I just want to know.
Because you don't need it.
You know, I have one question that will answer all the usability issues about that device. How do I play Legend of Zelda with it? How does it make that awesomer?
I actually
awesomer is a word.
I got to say, I can actually see a game like Zelda working with one of those. Because
like there's like a shield or something?
Well, no, just because, you know, you're looking at the maps of the worlds usually on a game like that.
Yeah.
So you can look down and see the map and then actually be playing up above. So a game like that, you know, where it's a big world where you kind of use those maps and switching weapons and things like that.
Yeah. In inventory.
I can actually see that more than other games. Did you see, by the way, how they started the keynote?
No, I didn't.
They had an orchestra playing all the Zelda music because it's like the 25th anniversary of Zelda or something like that. Like a
that
full
awesome.
Orchestra playing all the Zelda music, which I thought
that
was
awesome.
So cool.
That is very cool.
Other things out of E3?
Basically there was the Xbox announcement,
right.
Which we heard about a little bit. But they got into a little bit more detail about it. Yeah, the cable like box side.
Yeah,
of it.
Xbox Live TV, I think is what they called it.
Right.
It seems they're still pretty vague about it. But it seems like it's going to be a way to replace your cable box with your Xbox.
Right.
Pretty much. Or satellite. So you wouldn't need a separate DVR. It would turn your Xbox truly into the hub of your entertainment system.
Right. But I mean, it isn't bringing necessarily additional functionality. You still need your cable or satellite subscription.
Yes.
It's just
yes.
basically, it's just acting like, as a replacement for the box.
Device.
So
the
you can save that $5 a month rental fee that DirecTV waives anyway. You can save that money that you're not spending.
Right. Can
which honestly,
yeah,
in a certain
but the cable
sense,
companies don't waive that.
DirecTV does. If you threaten to
no,
leave,
but the cable companies.
Oh, cable companies.
Yeah, yeah, no,
I've
no,
been
no. That's like
years.
They make bank off those.
You know what's
boxes
gonna be funny though? They're just gonna be like they're just gonna make it mandatory. And they're like, oh no, you have to use it. And it's like, oh. Here's what's interesting. I love that somebody's working on that because I think the interface.
I like the integration.
Plus the interface on cable boxes historically has just been so bad, and they're so slow. They can just be awful. I mean, it's part of why why TiVo got such a leg up early on. They can actually it's actually
great,
nice to
smooth,
use,
slick interface.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So I love that idea. As we mentioned before, I'm bummed that Microsoft's their way of implementing that is basically buttressing the cable companies instead of working to disrupt them. That's a bummer to me.
Right.
But I.
They want to
be the center of your thing. That's cool. I would just – my hope is always that when we have new technology, it goes and replaces the technology in ways that are better for the consumer instead of reinforcing the companies that are screwing the consumer a lot of ways.
Yeah. But, and also the Xbox – and I agree with you, by the way. Oh, wholeheartedly. The Xbox also announced this new voice search functionality.
Yes, which is
cool.
Which
is cool.
Very cool.
Like you just – that's awesome. That's
totally.
Great. I mean, and they're using, I guess, similar voice search that they were using on the phones with Bing voice search.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably pretty robust. And you can just say, like, if you wanted to watch a Netflix movie, you can say search Netflix, name of movie, play. Great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's
really,
great.
Really cool.
Now, do you know if this uses the Kinect? Do you have to have the Kinect, did it say?
Well, there's no microphone built into the Xbox or the control. I mean, some places they have a controller. But yeah, you're not going to wear a headset. I think
it's probably a Kinect.
Yeah.
Function.
Because that's part of the whole.
Makes sense.
The Kinect's the whole hands-free initiative, right? So I think that would be why.
Yeah.
And
you could say just all of the features of being able to voice search and command the Xbox, I think, are great.
I think I agree. Yeah.
What a cool feature set. So. Yeah.
Well, and the voice thing, that to me makes a lot of sense. Like we've disagreed on the motion stuff,
right,
but
the
voice, that makes complete sense to me. And like, that seems really, really intuitive and fluid and ties in with how you want to use a TV, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Great feature. And
definitely.
So that was the Xbox stuff.
Right. And then there was this, and I don't know what to think of this next. First of all, it's Sony. So I just think it's, I'm just going to say, I will not support it as in general principle, but in terms of,
oh, hey Brian, guess what?
What?
Oh, Sony got hacked again.
Oh, what? Oh, is it Saturday already?
I think I'm going to say that every week.
You mean the weekly Sony
hack? It's like they killed Kenny with, South Park. Sony got hacked.
Really, just lock it up, guys. Like, how many different divisions can you have across the world that are jacked up? Lock it up.
Anyway, so they announced.
They announced something that will tie into some service that will be hacked at a future date. The hardware itself was a portable gaming device.
Called the Sony Vita?
La Dolce Vita?
The Sony Vita.
Yes, it was designed by Fellini, basically.
So, new portable gaming device.
Right.
To replace the PSP, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it seems like.
Um, It seems like a portable gaming device.
Yeah, I mean,
and I have to admit,
LED screen. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm not a big portable gamer. I think they're really, really neat. And like I've met,
there is a market for a lot of people.
Absolutely. When the PSP first came out, I was like, oh, this is cool. I'm just not a person that's going to buy them. I'm not going to carry the additional device around just personally.
Right.
But I think people that are into that, I'm sure it's fantastic and looks interesting. I mean,
Seem like much of a leap. Aside from a nicer screen,
It's been a touchscreen for a while, right? The last iteration was.
Actually, I don't recall,
because this one definitely is.
Yeah, it is a touchscreen. I they launched this phone, the Xperia Play, which was their foray into a phone / mobile gaming device, which conceptually is very interesting, but they. You know, now they just went back to improving the PSP. I don't know. I mean, it looks nice. It doesn't excite me at all.
I mean, and the phone didn't get that great. They had an interesting system behind the phone in terms of like having a separate like game marketplace and stuff. It didn't really seem to get a lot of – when it finally shipped, it didn't seem to get that great, you know, reaction.
No. And this – you can get a 3G version of the Vita, I read.
Right.
Which is interesting. It's not going to have phone – functionality, but it gives multiplayer gaming through a data connection through AT&T, right?
Yeah, I believe it is AT&T, yeah.
Yes.
And plus that makes sense because I'm sure, are downloadable games available on this?
I don't know. I think they were on the PSP, PSP, so I'm sure they are. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. They're not reinventing the world here, but
yeah, I mean, it has a
solid piece of equipment, it looks like.
I mean, the one thing that's interesting too, there's a rear camera, so they're pushing, an augmented reality thing, which to me just seems like, oh, you have a rear facing camera. Okay.
And
if
they do that right, that could be cool because you could be playing a game within a city, real city. Could be like think about the possibilities push that.
Do you remember when I showed this to you a couple of months ago? It was a Star Wars gunner game for iOS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, it was like, it's like you're in the Han Solo chair, like fighting off TIE fighters and stuff.
But there's using the camera.
Yeah, but there's an augmented reality mode where you could basically use the back camera. So then like get in your office chair and like be shooting TIE fighters around your office basically. It was very, very cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
And that kind of stuff, it's interesting. There's always kind of cool things you can do, I think, with augmented reality. There's the potential there at least.
There is the potential. Yeah. It's interesting that they're going that route.
Yeah.
And hopefully they use it and don't just let it lay in waste.
Yeah. But once again, it's how long? And this is this is going to sound probably offensive to people that are hardcore gamers. I really don't know how long discrete, separate, devices like this that are just gaming devices unto themselves are going to be around versus we're talking about with the PlayStation phone. Things are going to integrate other features.
You know what would be interesting is if something like this, if you were able to play, let's say whatever game it is on your PlayStation at home, mm-hmm. pause it, and then take it with you. And continue the game on a portable device.
Right.
That would be kind of groundbreaking. They haven't said they're doing that, but with the weight, the powerfulness, by how powerful these devices are becoming, it may be possible. That would for the hardcore gamers,
right.
That seems to be, a big selling point.
Yeah, the hard problem with all this stuff too is also because it does become an issue of form factor. There are ways you can go and lay out a world, on a 42-inch screen, or knowing that you're going to have at least a 26, more totally, almost like your 40. Totally. Some people even have a 60 or larger that you just can't do on like a 4-inch screen. Because like the layout would get too crowded, people are too small. The sprites on the screen, everything you're moving around, it's a weird problem, because that would be amazing, but almost is that feasible until you can go and get 3D glasses that basically really take over your entire field of vision? Like, I don't know.
maybe that's coming.
Yeah, so PS Vita, your name is weird,
seems like a stopgap.
Seems like they had to do something, so
seems like an in-between kind of thing,
but it doesn't even seem like an in-between. It doesn't seem like it's really moving towards upgrade. Anything else.
And why change the name? Why change it Vita? Why just
it just
the
seems
new PSP
like, yeah, it seems like a spec bump, frankly.
Yeah.
Like it's not, yeah, just make it PSP
X.
Yeah, or V3 and just like be done with it. Yeah, yeah. Whatever.
All right, so Sony.
Okay, yay. Yay, Vita.
We have our Sony issues.
you win. Yay, high five.
So that's the big stuff from E3. There are a lot of other video game game announcements and stuff like that. But,
Like Halo 4 will be big.
Halo 4
will
be
looking forward to that
and all that stuff.
Other stuff, we mentioned last week this whole thing with Lodsys, we don't know.
We're not sure.
No one knows. They don't know, I'm sure. about which is the company that was basically suing Android and iOS developers for – infringing on their patents for things like in-app purchases and that kind of thing. Basically, they'd filed suit. They'd sent threatening letters. They'd filed suit on Friday, I think it was Thursday or Friday. Apple basically filed an injunction against them, basically saying, we want to go and step in and get between you guys and these developers because we have your patents. I mean, we've licensed your patents. Our developers, they have a agreement with us where they can't even talk about this stuff really with you. And basically, made the argument that if they want to come after anybody, come after Apple. Don't come after the developers.
Right.
Which I think is great, because there's a lot of, they sent a threatening letter and everybody's like, oh, is this going to be it? I think it's great that they're going to the courts. They're going to go and fight this. It's still, the problem with that still is that it reinforces, it gives claim to the legitimacy of their patents because Apple's saying, we license your things, therefore you can't talk to our guys.
Right.
And obviously that doesn't solve the problem of our software patents like we talked about the week before, of how terrible they are and how we need to go and fix them. But in terms of like making it safe for developers, it's a good move. I think it's going to move towards, them putting an indemnification clause in the developer agreement.
True.
Google will have to follow suit. And that's how it should be.
At the end of the day, we know these guys are looking for a settlement.
Yeah.
They're just looking for a settlement. They're going to get a big one. Sucks.
Yeah. But, the big companies, if they have the cash to go and like get in the way, if they can pay out and protect, the small guy working out of his garage.
Which is nice.
That's good.
Which is nice. Yeah. That is nice. And good for Apple for doing that.
Yeah.
So little update on that.
Yeah, we will keep you updated as that continues to go. There's also some news that made Scott and I a flurry of texts and emails over the week. We were like, it made us very, very annoyed.
Very annoyed. I read this report. I wish none of these stupid blog – they're not stupid. I actually love these blog sites. But I wish none of these blog sites had picked up this story. It's annoying. Basically,
basically, there was a report put out that said it was on the use of cell phones and personal electronic devices on flights, and basically had listed some data that quote unquote proved the assertion that these things are terrible for the flights and can cause cataclysmic failures that can be putting your life in danger.
Right. It found – the report I'm reading found that there were 75 incidents between 2003 and 2009. Now, let's talk about that for a second. Right there, that should be where the article ends and you shouldn't read anymore because 75 incidents from – was that 6 years?
Yeah.
Okay. Airlines have – thousands of flights
per day.
Let's one airline has thousands of flights per day. There is not only one airline. There are many, many airlines. Thousands of flights per day per airline. So over the course of 6 years, it's nothing. It's nothing. And I'm not saying that it's not possible that some of these things have happened. But if they did happen, it was a flaw in the airplane.
Or there was some other,
or something,
interference
or something else that they're not accounting for.
Quite frankly, there are more incidents of food poisoning, and I would imagine planes landing because
of
people
pilots
got,
falling asleep. Of a billion
more than 75
other things
per 6 years. But here's the thing: it was an ABC News report. We'll put it in the show notes so you too can get angry.
God, ABC, why are you? You're fear mongering.
Well, it's just first of all, honestly, I think there are. Who knows who leaked this? Obviously, somebody I think kind of gave them this information, or maybe it's just a big button pushing story.
By the way, on this article I just read, there's 35,000 flights daily in the United States.
Yeah,
daily over 6 years. That's crazy.
I mean, seriously. My favorite part of this article, they talk about how there was a couple incidents where proximity to a laptop in the cockpit caused the GPS to malfunction and a clock to run backwards. Now, maybe I am just Johnny Future Boy and I just think everything's wonderful in the world of technology and it's okay. But if a laptop makes your clock run backwards, your clock is broken.
Right. It's not the laptop.
It's not the laptop.
Now, also, here's the thing. Here's the thing. By the way, I just did a quick calculation. That would be over 6 years, 76,650,000 flights. Oh, 75 instances over – that's
so you're basically saying it's –
like,
well, no. So you said 75 million, flights. So it's basically it's
– one in a million?
Obviously, it's dangerous.
You can –
clearly dangerous.
The statistics of dying in a car crash are greater than that. Wow. I mean, God. Also think about this. The problem, even if some of these are causing an issue, okay, maybe some of these were legit of the 75. Let's say they were. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it's the plane's fault because that shouldn't be an issue. Somebody – you have to protect against somebody leaving an on cell phone in their bag.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
You have to protect against some – I mean, these things are – and if the plane is properly built, there's a shielding in the cockpit. So well, this stuff doesn't
here's
happen.
Why it's, here's why it's total crap. Okay, and bottom
there's
line –
satellite signals outside.
It's, yeah, exactly. There are satellite signals outside. There are – how do you get Wi-Fi
on the
air?
Plane?
That has to happen wireless somehow. So apparently those signals to do that are traveling there already. If you offer that service, if you don't like basically have to fly above a protective shield above the globe, right. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All I know is that my DirecTV seems to work during – you know, before takeoff, you know, during takeoff.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
So basically, if that's okay, then you know those. Or wait, shouldn't those TV screens be turned off?
And
cause problems.
By the way, originally, you know, they make you put away your portable electronic devices at takeoff and landing. I read an article a little while back about this, and the reason for that was not because of the electric signal. It's because you were holding something hard and metallic in your hands.
Right.
And on takeoff and landing, there could be turbulence. It could fly out of your hand and hit somebody in the head. That was the main purpose of the having to turn on and turn off.
The whole thing is just ridiculous.
I mean, and the whole – and I'm going to rant a little about this.
Go for it.
This whole thing pisses me off. The fact that they make you put away your Kindles or e-readers on takeoff and landing is also ridiculous.
So much of it –
because those take up less power than your watch.
So much of it is just about basically getting people to shut up. This is a complete fear-mongering to be able to shut up. And I'm sure if you are – a flight attendant, it's annoying if somebody's talking on their phone. And I'm sure if you're an airline, you don't want there to be a bumpy flight and have somebody's phone head out and hit somebody else and then you go and sue them. You don't want that to happen. But guess what? Just say that.
Right.
Don't make up something that is so intuitively, obviously stupid that nobody in the world buys it.
Right. Imagine if they said that.
As your excuse.
Yeah. If they said, listen, that is the reason. Please put it away so it doesn't fly out of your hand and hit somebody during takeoff and landing.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
And even if they said that, then that wouldn't you think that if they said that, aren't they absolving themselves of responsibility at that point? Then it becomes that person's choice to not do
and,
it.
And if you're sitting next to somebody who's holding an iPad during takeoff, you're going to say, hey, can you put that away because of that rig? I don't want to get hit in the head.
And honestly, I think the more they go and put out bogus data like this, I mean, yes, 75 incidents out of 75 million, it just makes people annoyed. It makes me more likely to do it just to prove a point.
Agreed.
You know? So. And that's not to say also like in airlines, if you had an iPhone, they had that airplane mode thing where you could turn it off.
Yeah.
They would let you go then. It was fine. So,
right.
So what is the problem? Is it cell phone signals? Is it Wi-Fi? I mean, it doesn't. There's no consistency. It makes no freaking sense.
Here's the thing.
If you're going to require me to go through a machine that gives me cancer to prove I'm not a terrorist, if you're going to do that, then let me go and keep my freaking phone on when I want.
Yeah.
That's all.
I'm with you. All right. That's our rant. That's our airline rant because that article just – I saw it and I shot Brian an email right away. I'm like, did you see this? Anyway.
It's just – yes. But the next time your clock runs backward
– just remember.
Sure, yeah. Pray you're not in a plane.
Yeah. Pray you're not.
I mean, seriously.
Or you're time traveling. That'd be cool.
You know, maybe that's what was happening.
Maybe they went
back
in time.
Maybe Superman was flying around the Earth a bunch of times and causing everything to go backwards. They just didn't know.
I think that's what happened.
You know
they were just aware. They were in that plane and they were aware.
You know, don't blame the phones. Just blame Superman. He always does stuff like this.
Easy.
Seriously.
Easy. I mean, come on.
I mean, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, like the clock was going backwards and there was an earthquake down below and Silicon blah,
and,
blah, blah,
I mean,
blah.
Nobody raised their hand and said, Superman? I mean, come on.
Really? Seriously. Really, people?
I mean.
This is during the Superman episode. What is that?
I don't know.
Was Richard Pryor on the plane?
Oh, that's right. I forgot we even talked about that. Okay, on to something a little more fun, just quickly. We're really not going to have to talk all that much about it, but Google this week, the past couple of days, had they do their little doodles on their homepage.
Which basically it's like a little animated. You've seen it. It's an animation of some sort. Instead of saying Google, it has,
something.
Yeah, something. That
sometimes it just looks pretty. Sometimes it's a video.
Something you can interact with.
Yeah. The interaction ones I find a lot of fun.
Sure.
And they did a tribute to Les Paul this week.
Whose birthday it was.
Yeah, and so it was a guitar in the shape of a Google, and you can move your mouse over the keys to strum the guitar. And I just thought it was really fun and inventive. And the neat thing was that within a few hours of this thing going live, there were like 40,000 YouTube videos of people playing different songs on this thing. And I like that they do it. It's something that it kind of becomes water cooler talk, and it's neat and interesting and fun and funny, and it's just whimsical, and I like that they do that. So if you didn't check it out, it's still online. You can search Google Doodle Les Paul, and it's going to be up forever.
Yeah, there's some place they've
actually all their doodles you can.
Are they?
Yeah, all the doodles you can have. Like they did a Pac-Man one, which was a lot of fun.
That one I liked. You actually play.
You can actually play Pac-Man.
And the maze spelled out Google. That one I liked a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know they've done a bunch of different ones, but this week was the Les Paul. And if you go to YouTube, you can search all the different videos that got. I mean, all the different songs that got posted, which was pretty neat.
Yeah. So I'm. We'll talk about Turntable now if we want
to. Yeah, yeah, okay. Perfect segue from music to music.
There was a and this an app has been around. It's a web application. This has been around for a couple months, and it kind of like started to get like a lot of, you know, notoriety, and people really started talking about it a lot this last week. It's called Turntable.fm. It's a website. Just type in Turntable.fm to your web browser. Basically, it's a social media music sharing and discovery site where basically the idea is there are these virtual rooms that you're DJing in. Basically, they're big listening party rooms. And basically, people can sign into this thing. If you're Facebook friends with somebody on it, you can get into it. And you basically, you can go and add a bunch of songs to your DJ queue. There's a huge library of, you know, millions of tracks you can add to. And then basically, you're DJing in front of people. You can invite your friends, this kind of stuff. And there's a chat component, so you can talk to people when you're doing stuff. And it sounds kind of simple. And you're like, okay, whatever. But in practice, it's really, really incredible. Because you think about music, and the best way you learn about new music is through your friends. I mean, you read about it in blogs, or you hear about it, you know, on
different but your friends
stuff.
Recommend what they like and what's interesting.
That's the coolest way to hear stuff. So you go to these rooms, you can find one by, you know, random. You can search for one, like you say, okay, cool, I like electronic, or I like this band. You can find one that's playing that and just hang out, and these people will go and DJ different tracks. And it's just really, really fun. There's a whole game element because obviously I was playing it yesterday, and this one guy started playing a song, and I started playing a Joy Division song, and basically then it turned into us saying, like, oh, we should do like this, you know, 80s like goth cover thing. And so, like, we went around a bunch of rounds, like three other guys and I just like throwing different songs from this and like learned some new music I hadn't known about. It was like, and it's just really, really fun.
Is there like a main room or different rooms
there's
you can
no,
go to? Like,
no
so how did
room.
You connect with these guys?
It was random. Basically, you get up to it and they have a list of like the, I think, you know, some certain popular rooms right at the top. You can search based on artist or song or
can you
music
create
type.
A room?
And you can create a room.
Okay.
And like there's, you know, you can create a room that's private just for your friends or public
oh,
ones.
Wow. Oh, that's fantastic.
And
wow.
So what it's, and so you get in there and there's like basically has, it's a, you know, cute little graphic. It has like, you know, everybody's like, it has this little avatar, like a little,
right,
you know,
right,
midget
right.
dude. And
little
there's
midget
like
dude.
Little midget dude, like in, like the Wii used to have, little midget dude. Now Xbox has it too, midget dude.
Got it.
Not like your Peter Dinklage, just like a cartoony
That's
midget dude.
What I popped in my head because I've been watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah, not like that. Just a cartoony midget dude.
Okay.
And there's basically five, you know, five places to go and DJ. And you can basically, there's an open slot. You can just get in there and you start playing songs. And you can rank songs that are playing. So people can like give you points that way. If the people don't like the song, they can downrank it. You get enough downrankings, it'll skip the song and go to the next DJ.
Right.
And then you basically can chat and talk about these people. And there's links to go and add all those songs either to your DJ queue or to your Last FM, you know, profile or to like to iTunes so you can buy it.
And so where do the songs come from?
They come from a third party.
I mean, you can just search them through the site, but where do they actually –
It's all transparent to the user. They're coming from a service called, I believe it's called MusicNet, that basically, it's all legal. It's basically, you know, they're officially licensed and everything.
Which is great.
Yeah, so basically when you get into the game, you basically just go and it has your
and
DJ queue in the right.
It's licensed under the internet radio license, right?
You know, I'm not sure.
Isn't that what you said?
It's the DRMC?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I mean that's the Digital Rights Millennium, blah, blah, blah. but I think that's, it sounds like they're going under the digital radio. And so they must be paying, you know, digital radio fees, but that's great.
Yeah, and it's just – it's MediaNet is the company that they're basically doing everything from through.
Does it just curious about this MediaNet. We're on their site right now. Does it say what other services use them? I'm curious if there's anything about it.
It doesn't have it right here. We can we'll put this up on the show notes.
Yeah, just curious.
Because it's very, very interesting. They have 11 million tracks. There's obviously a ton of stuff. There were some songs I was looking for that I couldn't find that were a little bit obscure. But in terms of anything major you'd want to see, you could find. You can also upload your own music. I'm not sure how that works in the legality side of it, but you can't upload
That's
songs yourselves.
And you can upload and then, I guess, play it in your room?
Correct. But it's a really, really cool site. It's really, really fun. In terms of music discovery, it's probably the only really 100% successful way that I found. There are certain other sites, you know, you can go and find music and get stuff recommended, that kind of stuff. Pandora, obviously, you can do radio stations, that kind of stuff. But in terms of one-to-one as a true social experience where you're making friends online, you know what I mean? You can follow different DJs. So you know, if you have somebody that you like their taste, you can follow them and that kind of stuff. It's really, really unique. Right now they're in beta. It is closed. It was up until Friday and then they closed the beta for a little bit in terms of new members. It should be opening up again soon. But turntable.fm FM is the website. Highly recommend it. Really, really fun.
And can people find you on it since you're on it?
Yeah, I'm BC Bishop, like my handle on everything. I'm BC Bishop on Turntable.
And I mean, I'm going to try and get on there as soon as I can. I tried to get in the beta.
Yeah.
Our other friend Mike also tried to get in the beta and it was a no-go.
Yeah, they closed it yesterday because, like I said, a lot of people signed up this last week, and I think they closed it, at least for the time being, on Friday. Do they have a time frame on each year?
It didn't say. It just said it's reached capacity. We'll be back up soon.
Okay.
So I'm just going to kind of check every day. And so, you can log in with your Facebook credentials.
Yeah, there's no like separate profile. You basically log in just through your Facebook exclusively. If you are – and you have to be – right now while it's in beta, once they open up membership, you need to be Facebook friends with somebody that's already in it, and that's how you get in. There's also a sign-up. You can basically give your email so they can go and let you know when they're doing, you know, they'll send you an invite at that point.
Right, but
really, really cool. Really, really fun.
It looked like an awesome site. I was so bummed that I didn't get to.
Yeah.
Brian sent a bunch of all our friends the link to this. And, you know, we all that same day wrote back, can't get in.
Well, it's funny because I have all of us are big, big music fans. But, you know, we have a lot of friends that are just really, really cutting edge music guys. Basically always finding new stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like months before I feel like it's even gets broken. Yeah.
Jamie and Sam and Mike.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So I love the idea of basically having setting this room up where we can just go and spin tracks that we like because we all have similar tastes. We all appreciate each other's
taste. Hey guys, come to my room, check this out. I found this really cool.
And that's the thing cool too. When you found a room that things are working, you can go and post that room to Facebook, to Twitter. You can share it so people can come in. Check out the room, stuff you're listening to. And it's really, really great.
That's cool.
So I think it has a big future in front of it. I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years, you know, we're still talking about Turntable FM as a big game changer.
I really can't wait to try it because it looks fun. Brian showed me a demo, and so keep checking if you want to get in on the beta and check it out. We're gonna move on to food. So this week I got to try a restaurant I've been wanting to try for a while. This restaurant, Red O. Mm-hmm. Opened up about a year ago out here, Mexican restaurant. The menu was designed by Rick Bayless. I don't know if you know who Rick Bayless. He was on Top Chef Masters. He's a chef in Chicago, where I'm from. He's got a couple of restaurants there. He's a very world famous Mexican food chef.
Yeah, renowned for that. And is he like traditional Mexican or more like fresh? I mean, more like, you know, the new kind of
both. I mean, he does his unique twist on Mexican food, but also very
He comes from traditional and he kind of brings new things to it.
He can nail the traditional like nobody's business, but then also does these unique, cool twists on the food. Now, this is not his restaurant. He actually, and a lot of people don't know this, he doesn't own the restaurant. He got hired out to design the menu.
Now, when you say design, like the foods are all his recipes?
He created all the dishes. So, it's called Red O Mexican Cuisine by Rick Bayless, but he is not the owner of the restaurant.
Gotcha.
He was only hired on to design the menu. His place is in Chicago. He owns his restaurants. He's the head chef. He just came out, did the menu, and I don't know how much involvement he has post that, but that's the kind of interesting thing about the restaurant. You know, everyone's, Rick Bayless is opening a restaurant in LA, and then it turned out he actually was not.
You know, that's interesting. I wonder if that seems like a smart way for chefs, given that have become brands unto themselves at this point.
Totally.
I wonder if you'll see a lot more of that going. I mean, they're kind of like franchising themselves out, you know?
And why not?
Yeah.
You know, if they're designing the menu and they oversee the initial setup of it, that's great. And it can get their food to more people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good way to go and to monetize their brand.
Yeah, totally. So the restaurant itself, the design of the place was beautiful. Just an awesome – this spot has been a bunch of different places over the years. And they just did it this open, airy, very cool space. I really just enjoyed walking in there, which was, you know, nice right off the bat. Had a really good cocktail margarita to start off with. I can't remember what it was. It had some sort of cucumber juice in it and tequila and agave, and it was delicious.
It had tequila. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, it had tequila. Started off with some guac, classic guac, perfect guac.
Also known as guacamole.
Guacamole. They did an awesome guacamole. It was fantastic. It was fresh. You could taste the lime juice. Like it had just been made and the lime juice just put in there. So guacamole, 5 stars. I mean, it was fantastic guacamole. Then they kind of have a side of Mexican tapas. You know, so you can order a bunch of different things. Then they have the entrees. So we decided to get a couple of different of the tapas and then get an entree. The tapas stuff was great. Had a yellowfin tuna ceviche, which was, oh man, it was ridiculous. And it was, I'm kind of pulling it up on the website. It was yellowfin tuna, cilantro, serrano, chimichurri, cucumber, avocado.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, no, it was so good. It had a little bit of kick to it, a little bit of spice, very fresh tuna. Delicious. Loved it. I love the taste it left. It was kind of like that little aftertaste that it left on your mouth was great. Then we had a slow-cooked Sonoma duck tomato in duck tomato chili sauce, which was – it was like a taquito with it was awesome. Just really moist duck. It wasn't dry at all. You really tasted the flavor of the duck and the seasoning, and then the taquitos were prepared perfectly. It was just – so far I was all in on the restaurant. I was doing good. Like everything tasted great, and it was the perfect amount of food, and it was good to share. It was fun. You know.
Oh, like this sounds like there's a twist coming.
Oh, man, there might be a twist. Then we did have one other thing. It was some sort of – I can't remember what it was, but it was a pork belly thing, which was great. This was on the you know, the tapas type stuff. Mm-hmm. Then for an entree, we got the mole chicken poblano dish. So Rick Bayless is kind of renowned for his mole. It's supposed to be just this amazing mole sauce. The guy is just well, that's one of the things he's known for.
Right.
And I love mole. Have you ever had – I mean, you've had mole before. I mean, a good mole – and here in Los Angeles – there's a lot of mole. There's a lot of very authentic Mexican cuisine in LA, and we're like lucky to have that out here. Do you agree?
Oh, I do agree. I was just trying to set if I should make a holy mole joke.
Always make a holy mole joke, Brian. Come on. You know what show you're on.
Okay. I'm just considering it.
So, you know, and for those who don't know, mole sauce has some sort of chocolate flavor in it, normally cinnamon. Depends on what kind you're getting, but it's either stronger or lighter, all different kinds. So we got the chicken mole poblano. I got to say, I was so disappointed at this chicken. The chicken was prepared nicely. It was fine, but it was nothing special. And the mole was extremely bland. And I don't know if it was just that night or the dish we got. And I like to think of myself as having a pretty good palate. I usually can tell different flavors in food. I just can. You know, I eat a lot. And I no, I've been lucky to have – I don't know. For some reason, I can. I have a good palate. It just is what it is. Take my word for it, people. you heard it here.
Okay, so.
So it just – it had very little flavor. And like, you know –
Was it just – you say it was
– it was kind of bland, really.
Was there not enough like, you know – what did it need? Did it need more chocolate? Did it need more like spice?
It needed more everything. It needed more everything. I tasted some of the flavors or some cinnamon in there, but there was nothing, and it shouldn't be overpowering, but it should leave this, it should really have, you should really have
should
this
resonate.
Flavor. Yeah. In your mouth as you're eating this, especially for the, you know, world renowned mole that this guy is putting out. I was really upset.
Were your guys, you know, sometimes you can have something that's like super, super spicy and then everything else kind of like pales after that. Was it a situation like that or everything?
You know,
else?
I was trying to think if it
didn't
was.
Seem like anything.
No,
nothing
was like over.
About it.
Yeah. I thought the same thing as I was eating, but nothing was overpoweringly spicy. And, you know.
And you would know basically how the chicken tasted underneath of that was what was going on.
The chicken was fine. It was nothing special. But, you know, the top of stuff was like far and away better than the entree. And it disappointed me. I was excited for that. Maybe my expectations were a little too high.
Right.
I don't know. But it just. It's rare that I eat something and actually say it was bland, and it was kind of bland. But we said something to the waiter, not in complaining. He asked us. I'm like, well, you know, everything else was awesome. This was
and everybody else
bland.
Had the same impression.
No, he just like he's like, oh, that's interesting. He's like, I'm gonna go taste some in the back, but then he never came back and gave us his response. But anyway,
well, maybe you know.
Maybe it was bad.
His response was like either like, yes, this is terrible.
We
you
can't
need to
go
pay
tell
for
them
it. Or this is great. You people are lame. What's
right.
wrong?
I know. Well, you know, sometimes you can have a bad night.
Oh, sure. Of course.
I would hope that it's better. I've heard very mixed reviews from other people that have been to the restaurant. All in all, awesome restaurant. I highly recommend it in general. If you're going to go, my recommendation would be.
No, you don't recommend it.
No, I do. My recommendation would go all tapas and don't do the entree side because they were so good and you can sit with another person and order four or five of those of tapas style, get some guac and you've got a really filling, you know,
meal. Yeah.
Oh, they did redeem themselves majorly with the desserts. hold on. I have to actually look them up because I got to remember what they were called.
I'm surprised. Usually you have a dessert stuff like,
I know. Okay. So there was a Veracruz style buelos, which with salted caramel ice cream and warm Kala chocolate sauce.
I know they have you at caramel ice cream, but
it was amazing. I don't even know what it was, but it was just delicious. I couldn't stop eating it. It was so, like, just the ice cream itself was amazing.
Right.
And then it was like this, it was fantastic. So, and then the other thing was a pastel de tres leche with Mexican goat's milk caramel, brown butter, pecans, and whipped cream.
Mm.
This thing
sounds very good.
Was like the perfect flavor. I mean, it was just, the cake was really moist and just, you know, the flavor of the goat's milk caramel had just enough difference of taste to make it really unique and really special,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it had that goat's milk, little bit of aftertaste to it, but not too strong. I don't know if you've ever had goat's milk, but
I have.
Yeah, Brian has a goat actually in his.
Yeah. Notice the notion of goat's milk aftertaste.
Wow.
Not the right imagery.
You know, you're ruining my dessert here.
I'm not. You asked me. You asked me what I was referencing.
It's true. It's true.
I'm sorry. True.
Nope. You're right. Damn it. Bum now. Can never have it in it. Anyway, so Red O, if you're in Los Angeles, or Rick Bayless Food, just general in Chicago. I don't know if he has restaurants anywhere else, but.
But stay away from the Mole Chicken.
I mean, I may give it another try at some point, but in general, I would say if you go heavy on the tapas side.
Yeah. It's really weird too. When you go to a restaurant that's really nice like that, and you're expecting it to be a good experience, and then something like your main – everything else is kind of, you know, it's foreplay up to the entree, right?
Right. You want the entree to blow
you
away.
Yeah. You want that to be like the pinnacle, and then like, you know, it's kind of like it's like looking at the it's like at a story. You know what I mean? Like that's like the big climax. Then like the dessert kind of like lets you off. It's the denouement, and then you're done. You're done.
Yeah. No, you're totally
to
right.
To have that happen is like – it kind of kills the whole thing.
It was a downer. It was a downer. I mean, I'm glad that the desserts were so good because it left me on a good note.
Yeah.
But I was bummed. I was bummed. I still recommend the restaurant in general, but I was bummed at the Mole, unfortunately.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's too bad. So that's my food stuff this week. Before we say goodbye, you and I need to do something. We're gonna sing our way out. I haven't told Brian this.
Actually, there's one other thing we need to do first.
Oh, there's another thing.
Last week's show, we basically made a wager. We made a bet.
We did make a bet.
About announcements that would be given at this week's WWDC. The idea was to go and have three different items, and whoever got the most out of three would then be the winner of a grand total sum of $5 American. Very, very exciting.
We went Trading Places style here.
Scott only picked two because he was going big. He was so confident. He said, I only need two to win this thing. Scott said there's going to be some sort of unknown OS integration between iOS and Mac OS X Lion that was not iCloud, something else. And he also said there was going to be a new iPhone or some other, like, you know, the hardware. But you felt strongly it was going to be whatever the new iPhone's going
to be. I was throwing something out there.
Yeah. I said that we're going to go and see OS updates over the air. We're going to see wireless syncing with iTunes. And we're going to see – and as I said, it was not going to run iOS 5. Was not going to run on the 3GS.
Right.
Now, on mine, we did see wireless OS updates.
We did.
We did see wireless syncing.
We did.
We are, but however, iOS 5 will run on the 3GS. So I got two out of three.
You did. I got none.
Yeah, there was no hardware announced and there was no
This is why I don't do well in Vegas. I'm just, you know, throwing that out there. There's a reason. Yeah.
So now I need my $5.
Do you have change? I will ceremoniously give you a bill, and then you will break it.
Okay. This represents
the $5. It's a larger bill.
It does not represent the additional monies that are included within.
Which
I do
is
not
now
get to
in
this.
Brian's hand.
I have to give back 3/4 of this bill.
Yes, you do.
But 1/4 of it is mine.
Yours.
Mine.
Brian,
but it was a pleasure.
You take this one, Bishop.
It was a pleasure wagering with you, sir.
We will meet again. Don't you worry.
Now, what is this singing that I'm suddenly very nervous about?
No, don't be nervous. We're going to do something fun for our friend Jamie. Today is Jamie's birthday.
It is. It is indeed.
Today is our friend and listener. Jamie's birthday is today.
Okay.
So he is not with us. He's not that he's not with us, but right. he's not here in LA.
He's not here in the recording studio, or in Los Angeles, or California.
He's out of town in Houston right now. So Brian and I are going to sing happy birthday to Jamie as a send off for our show.
It's a good idea.
I like this. I think so. So I'm Brock.
I'm Ryan. and this has been Tech Bacon. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Dooner. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, brother.